Blog Talk Radio.
Three-minute warning.
DFL, baby!
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the ad.
Come on, go, go, go!
Be a fit. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You have any more popcorn?
You know what being down by 20 at halftime means?
Sweet, diddly,
jack, squat.
Why? Because you can storm back. I know it, you know it. They ducked into their little beds tonight. They don't want to be haunted by you crossing that goal line. But it's time to give them a nightmare. And cross it.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Candid Frank, the CFL is the best football in the world show. I'm Frank, the true double blue Argo lifer Stanishi and the host of the show. Please welcome our co-hosts and friends of the show, Mike, the CFL is the best football in the world Townsend and future owner, Manasseh, harder to find than Waldo Gibber-Medin, Christopher, let's talk CFL and Lions Den Jones, Kelly, CFL know-it-all Bale, Bruce, the 13th man John Inch, Aaron, enough. Enough with the posting Macintosh. Gary, is it rock season yet, Groove? Stevie, the what else can I buy in Argo Colors Richardson? Rob, the pistol, Jay Emery. Storm takes no Schmidt. Bill and Liam, the world travelers, and how? Serge, the CFL season ticket hoarder and collector, Duke the Yen. Derek, the bomber boot, Christopher. Kevin, Cheryl, and Cuddly Clan Kingsley. Kim, watch out, boys, Weaver. Debbie Riders, rule regardless, Wormsbecker. Donna, I will admin ya, Gale. Aaron, William, the meathead freelance. Jarrett, the roadie, and box J Boy Harris. Leanne, Lease Girl, what am I doing here, hockey? Steve, Rock and Roll Myers, Mike, Keeble, Cable, Cancellera, Reddit, retweet the show CFL every time, Aaron Russell, the organizer, Nagy, Doug, look at the big lens, and say cheese, Lewis, Joe, I'm like a Tulisan to the show Sardella, Danny E, likes caring for elderly, Salonen, Spike, I will nail you, Sutherland, Andrew, the graphic illustrator, Crump, Frank, the mascot, Kirby, Tony, I wish I could agree with you, Frank Dejeuner, Becca, I will deadlift you, Veludo, Tangerine, I have a dream, Queen, Annette and Paul, that's my beautiful son, Jason Pottinger. And finally, Randy, Captain Video Christinger.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candace Frank Live Show. We're the Argo Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candace Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Woo. Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
What a great way to be introduced. Lovely cheerleaders. I mean, even though it's just a repeat over and over again, and they only did it once last year, and if I probably asked them this year, they probably wouldn't do it. No, I'm just kidding. I think they'd do it again. But I tell you, it's one of those things where when you do something, we just threw a mic in front of the girls. I just want to make this clear. And Jessica's amazing, and the rest of the girls just as. They did that all off the cuff. And I think it came out really good. They did a great job. Jessica wasn't, there was no script, nothing like that. They didn't know the name of the show, knew nothing about the show, knew nothing about the host of the show, knew nothing about the guests on the show, knew nothing about the friends of the show. But they do know how to cheer, and they do a great job, just like the rest of the cheerleaders in the CFL. So I came down with a bit of a cold. Yeah, you know how us men are when we get sick. We're very weak and unable to handle things ourselves. All you heard all day was, honey, honey, dear, sweetie, darling, love of my life. That's the only crap you hear. Anyway, so let's look at the week this week. And I had a chance to watch a few football games. The vacation last week put me back. And so this week I'm a little more prepared to – I've watched today, in fact, I watched 2 weeks' worth of football games. So I'm ready for football, I got to tell you. And all the games were impressive from at least one angle. From some angles, the games were not as impressive. And I guess the easiest thing to say is when your team loses, not so impressive. But regardless,
You know, McMaster has been a disappointment for Hamilton fans. It obviously is proven by the lack of interest in filling that very small stadium. Now, at face value, even a bigger disappointment would have been, before that game started, the fact that Zach Collaros was put on the six-day disabled list. And that in itself is scary because they really did, and I'm talking when I say they, Kent Austin, you know, let Burris go and sign this guy to a serious contract. And he proceeded to be injured in Game 2 against Edmonton with what might have looked like a concussion to begin with, but now we're talking neck and maybe concussion, but back problems, which have put him on the shelf. So here's Hamilton going into a game against an opponent with, and of course, the Red Blacks. And this opponent is a team they're going to be, they've got to eliminate from the playoffs, because this is probably going to be the year, and as an Argo fan, this bothers me to no end. It looks as though the first two teams in the East will be the only two teams in the playoffs. The last two will not make it. I just don't think the bottom two are going to have a better record than the bottom three in the West, at least the way things look now. But the beauty of the CFL is things can turn around rather quickly. And to the point, a young lad named Dan Lefevre, he took over the controls after Mazzoli didn't do so well. And he goes in game five against the Red Blacks, and he proceeds to throw for 361 yards and a major. He rushed for 109 yards, and you know, he led his team to a 33-23 win. And you know, he looked unstoppable. The kid was awesome. I gotta tell you, very impressive. And much like many in Hamilton had hoped, banked on the decision by Austin that Collaros would display in the early going of the season. Now, the record of the Eastern Division teams is easy to describe. Not many wins. Which brings us to the Ottawa Red Blacks. Now, this team has been very competitive, as many of us considered was going to be quite possible by virtue of the way the draft was held, you know, the dispersal draft, the equalization draft. It's been known by different names in different leagues at different times. In this case, Ottawa was able to bring in a lot of experienced, good players, where in many drafts in history, you get a lot of experienced players, but they either used to be good or they're not quite good enough. But Ottawa, we can all agree, you know, they started with their lines, and unfortunately, there wasn't much choice left in receivers. And that seems to be their biggest difficulty this year, and if not for Mahar, their kicker, their field goal kicker, they wouldn't have beat the Argos because they won without scoring a touchdown. Now, that's a good thing. Mahar's a good thing. And beating the Argos, if you're an Ottawa Red Blacks fan, at the home opener, like I was, it makes you very happy that they won. But that seems to be the only thing I can say about the Ottawa Red Blacks. In Montreal, Brandon London, his star is rising. This guy is proving to be proof that the sun can rise in the East every day. It just doesn't rise very often in the Eastern Division of the Canadian Football League. Things are a little cloudy in the Eastern Division of the Canadian Football League. But this guy is a stream of light for the Montreal Alouettes, and he has made Smith look good, who has had, at best, looked out of place this year. Their quarterback, I think, can play a lot better than he has, and I think he will as well. Now, with the Argonauts, here's what I'm going to say about them. Ricky Ray is still healthy. That's it. That's all I need. No, just kidding. he's still healthy. And, you know, this has been a season where pass protection for the Argonauts has been weak at best. Now, they've been rotating, the team that has, at least, has been rotating with a lack of pass protection and the ability for Ray to find receivers as quickly as he used to find Chad Owens and a few other people, as you all know who they are if you're an Argo fan. He's had difficulty doing that thus far, and instead has been sacked mercilessly by the opposition. For that reason, I have to say that the Argonauts' biggest problem is discipline. And that discipline carries over into nervousness. When you play undisciplined, you take a lot of penalties, pressure starts to get on, you fall behind, you start to squeeze the rock a little too hard. What we've seen in the past few games is there have been numerous opportunities where the Toronto Argonauts could have picked up a fumble or made an interception. My apologies for the cough. Well, you know what? Good news is that the Double Blue are not making excuses. Ricky Ray, first in line, he immediately comes out with what is common sense, and that is that, in fact, they need to hang on to the ball a little more. That's what they need to do. And by that he meant, of course, the offense be out there and give the defense a little rest. Now, I was on the phone with a buddy, and we were talking about the Argos and about the turnovers and all that kind of stuff, and my daughters work in a bakery, three of them, and they were asking where the Argos sell their turnovers. I explained to them that's a football term where the, you know, where the team relinquishes the ball at an untimely moment in a game, and they do it unwillingly. It may look like they're willing to lose it, but that's not what happens. Their discipline in holding the ball, we've watched in other cities, in Saskatchewan in particular, a circular doorway of running backs because a guy drops the ball once. Once! And the Argos are fumbling the ball everywhere. Their discipline is pathetic, and they will continue to lose until they develop the confidence to hang on to the ball, protect Ricky, give him that extra steamboat that will allow him to, you know, make the passes that he can make. Now, that's all the negative. The positive is that Anthony Coombs looks like a future star. And for that, Argo fans, we can be grateful, because it's going to be interesting when the healthy bodies, or should I say the unhealthy bodies, return to the lineup healthy. That kid's going to be hard to keep out of the lineup, and that's just going to be another weapon for Ricky, where he is minus three weapons right now. He will have four weapons when the rest of the guys come back, and hopefully all the players will be back sooner rather than later, but we do know the 6-day is an issue for a couple of Argo players. Now, the British Columbia Lions, the good news for them is that Travis Lule is back at practice this week. And, how soon will he come back? Well, it's good news that he's back in practice. And the biggest thing one can say about the Lions is they've blown hot and cold. But they've blown very hot for a time. They haven't been a team like the Argos that had one good game and then the rest has been... They've had a couple of good games. They look really good. This is going to be an opportunity for them to have a bounce-back week, and maybe they will. On the Western Front, the Calgary Stampeders, a team that remains as the only unbeaten team, one that I thought at the beginning of the season had issues. One of them was that Bo Levi Mitchell wasn't a proven entity. He silenced my concerns, and he doesn't look like a fluke at all. So, you know... our friends in Calgary signed Hugh Charles today, and Hugh Charles of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for one game that dropped the ball once and then was nailed to the bench. We'll see how he does in Calgary. John Huffnagel's known a little, he's known as being a person who's a little more patient, and that patience could pay off for them with Hugh Charles, at least until John Cornish can get back, who's on the six-week disabled list, and I think he's already gone through 1 week, or is it a second week now? Edmonton, the other Alberta team, they had themselves a bounce-back week. And, they didn't have a bounce-back week. They're hoping for a bounce-back week, too. They lost. He's happy with the players who are showing some form of accountability, and they look sincerely upset about the loss and look sincere about making amends. Also announced on Facebook, that's right, on Facebook, Corey Williams says he has signed with the Riders. Now, Riderville breathed a giant sigh of relief with the thumping of the undermanned, underdisciplined Toronto Argos. Making it happen was this week's entrant into the temporary running position, Will Ford, finding the end zone three times. He may be a keeper. Oh, no. Oh, boy, guys, sorry. Let me sign some mic. You don't need to hear me sneeze, coughing, basically. That sound must sound gross. But, you know, the show must go on. So that covers Saskatchewan. And I got to tell you, the Gophers are real happy, and I'm glad for them. I'm very happy for the Gophers. They were in a panic. They're in spin cycle. I mean, they're already talking about Durant not being a good enough quarterback for their team. Now, on the subject of good quarterbacks and guys that were Saskatchewan property, Drew Willey, has he not looked good now? You know, so they had a great bounce back game against a great team, the BC Lions. These are the kind of wins, that say the blue and gold are for real when they can do that. Liriam Hariulu, he's a CFL rookie whose foot has been outstanding. This is a great kicker. He has, he's really busted onto the limelight, and he's made field goals look easy. In fact, he kicked five of them, and that's the best single-game performance of his young career. And he obviously accounted for most of the scoring, as the upstart Winnipeg Blue Bombers thumped the BC Lions 23-6 at BC Place Stadium. And he was really happy with the game, and he was really happy that the team trusted him. And this St. Catharines, Ontario kid, Western University player, deserves all the accolades that he's getting. He's been an outstanding addition to the team. Now, one of the subjects we want to talk about, if you guys are willing to call in, the phone number here is 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. One of the subjects I'd like to talk about, actually it's two subjects. Which assistant coach from last year and head coach, that became a head coach this year, do you think has done the best job thus far? In the group, I include, of course, Ottawa's Rick Campbell, Winnipeg's Mike O'Shea. Campbell, of course, came from Calgary. O'Shea came from the Argos, as did Chris Jones in Edmonton. And I'm including Tom Higgins because he was in the league, wasn't a head coach. He was the head of officiating, but now he's a head coach. And just wondering what you think he's doing. So those four guys. It's a good time to start discussing these young quarterbacks with Lefebvre doing what he did. He has put himself on the map of a list of very young quarterbacks in the CFL, a wave of very young quarterbacks that have proven without a doubt that this is the year of the young quarterback. And the assistant coaches turned head coaches. And finally, let's begin by me blowing my nose, which means I'm going to turn off the mic again. Well, you know what? I'll try and hang in there and not sneeze on my mic. Okay, this week's scores were Stamps 26-22 over their provincial rivals, the Esks. Blue Bombers 23-6 over the Lions. Ticats over the Redbacks 33-23. Riders 37-9 over the Toronto Argonauts. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Juice. You heard me. We're going to talk to Juice. Juice brought in by our buddy Mike. Mike and I are going to have a little conversation with him, and then later maybe he'll hang around and put up with the rest of the peons in this group, that doesn't sound good, does it? It doesn't mean what it sounds like. Regardless, we're going to go for a short break, and we'll be back in a short couple of minutes.
Did you know in Canada we have no fair catch rule?
No fair catch?
No fair catch.
Holy mackerel.
Hopefully there's aspirin on the side with the medics.
Somebody's going to get hurt.
No fair catch? Injuries?
I see some pain.
That could be kind of dangerous. I believe somebody would get killed like that.
You guys like it violent up there, huh?
CFL. We play by our own rules.
Why do you think it takes you guys four downs to get 10 yards? We only need three up there.
Because we always make mistakes.
We're just kind of slow, laid back. Got to get an extra down in before we can get our 10 yards.
They give us one just in case.
I love four downs. First down, second down, third down, fourth down.
You're saying you're better.
No, there ain't no fourth down.
They want the game to go slower, I guess, for the commercials.
Y'all are obviously better. Must be the long
long winters, maybe?
Do they have longer legs? Are they faster? Is there, you know, better gene pool?
In the CFL, the play clock is 20 seconds rather than 40.
20-second play clock. Quicker tempo.
Well, they better be a lot smarter men on the field then.
Yeah, man, the respiratory system needs to be in good shape.
That's pretty quick.
That doesn't sound very fair. It doesn't give them enough time. They barely have time to do it here.
God forbid there's a different defense.
Oh, boy, that's fast. I mean, you got to get it done.
I'd say 30 seconds. Yeah. I get them an extra 10 seconds.
20 seconds, you know. That would keep things moving and grooving.
You know, in the Canadian Football League, we have 12 guys instead of 11. What do you think, an extra man out there?
Of course. They all look good in their pants.
Ooh, can I take him home?
I think you can never have too many men in tight pants on a football field.
And we have unlimited motion in our backfield.
Wow.
Wow.
You know?
A whole new realm of possibilities, huh?
And they're ready to go again in 20 seconds.
Where is this again?
That's interesting.
I may have to rest up a little. CFL, I got to watch it. Go Canada.
Damn straight, go Canada. Oh, Canada, our home and... Okay, never mind. Okay, so our guest tonight is a young fella whose name, his nickname is Juice Akins. And I want to thank Mike for bringing him on. And why is he on the program? Well, David Akins II is on the program because, believe it or not, he played in Eastern Europe, played football, legitimate football in Eastern Europe, a place called Serbia. You know, when you say a quarterback has a rocket for an arm, in Serbia, I'm going to ask him whether they really have, never mind. That's a political thing. I shouldn't have gone there, but I couldn't resist. Anyway, David Akins, his nickname is Juice. He comes from Detroit, Michigan. He's a wide receiver, running back, kick returner, punt returner. And he can also play cornerback if needed. The college he went to is College of St. Scholastica. That sounds like, that must be next door to Galactica, University of Galactica. He's 5'8", 175 pounds, and he was born in 89. He can bench 210. He does the 40-yard dash in 4.27 seconds, 4.40 recently. He can do the three-cone shuttle in 3.9 seconds. His vertical jump is 30 inches. Now, I won't give you his contact information. Now, here's a couple of words from his coach back down there in the Serbian country there, way in the east there where none of us have been in a short time. Akins was one of the key players that helped our team during the season and contributed to the team's success greatly. Every game Akins played on both sides of the ball at wide receiver, free safety and cornerback, as well as special teams player and as a returner, Akins proved himself as an agile and fast player and of immense value in crucial times of a football game. He has set the scale as an amazing player and athlete, and we were all very happy with his results. Signed, Srdan Kosic, president of Kraljevo Royal Crowns. Now, that sounds pretty good. There's more here. But instead, let's take some time, and we'll bring Mike Townsend in first, and we'll let Mike do his version of an introduction before we bring Juice in on the conversation. Mike Townsend, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Frank? How you doing tonight?
Awesome. You know, I'm going to have to turn my mic off once in a while because I'm sneezing up a storm, coughing up the storm, and not feeling well at all. But it does wonders for the radio voice.
Hey, you sound fine to me, man. Got a nice, deep, very professional. Hey, man, you got it going on tonight, bro.
One of these days, we're going to do the Barry White thing. I'm going to do the Barry White thing.
There you go.
Oh, baby.
There you go.
So, tell us your version of Juice Akins and what you know about Juice.
Well, you know, me and Juice been in contact with each other going on, I give myself about a year and a half, man. I was, you know, going through Facebook. You know, I always befriend a lot of the football players, the indoor arena leagues, and I came across his profile, some pictures. And what really got me is that he's from Detroit, Michigan. You know, I love my home. You know, I love my hometown.
Oh, there we go. See how that works. So you see how that works. Doesn't matter why.
I love my hometown boys. And, you know, for him to be playing ball overseas and doing what he's doing coming out of Detroit, Michigan, I mean, you know, every city has their problems like Detroit does. But, you know, a lot of people use football and sports as a pastime to get away, to keep from being in gangs, being in the streets, doing things that they weren't supposed to be doing out there, you know, because it's the stuff that can get you in trouble. I mean, there's not a lot of things you can't do not to find trouble, you know what I'm saying? And being from Detroit, and by me being from there, knowing how it is growing up and knowing in his generation how it was growing up, man, I was kind of impressed for the things he's doing because, you know, you talk to him, you see his Facebook posts. First thing he do, he give it up to God, man. He say, you know, if it wasn't for God, he wouldn't be doing the things he's doing. And, you know, for somebody to do that, man, I'm really impressed. You know what I'm saying? He's very humble. And the guy from what I looks on the weekly post that he put when he's a Serbian, he's a workhorse, man. He puts up his pitch, and I like to see guys like that make it, you know?
And I got to say, we're having a little bit of difficulty. I just lost him. And I'm trying to get him back in. I'm calling him on the backup number. If you're listening, Juice, I'll try the cell number. I just normally try the cell number last.
So, Kiwa, I'm not here right now, but if you could leave me your name and number with a brief message, I will return your call. Thank you.
Juice has a bit of a high voice. We'll try his cell number. That's funny. That's hilarious. No, we'll give it a shot. We'll try here. Anyway, tell us a little more about him while I try to put this together here with him. And so you know him from Michigan, and he's a homeboy. And this thing about
boy.
This thing,
you know what I'm saying?
Do you find it amazing that in fact he does and did play in a place like Serbia? How surprised were you that there was actually football in Serbia?
You know what, Frank? When he posted and said he was going back to Serbia to play football, I'm like, wow, Serbia? I went on. I looked at the team he was playing for. So I went in Google, and I Googled the team, and the whole league popped up. And man, I have to tell you, it's a lot of professional football teams over in Europe and Serbia. I mean, some nice teams, man. That the uniforms look nice. I mean, some big boy teams. I mean, it's a lot.
I hope we have you now, David. David Akins, the second, otherwise known as Juice. Have we got you this time?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Oh, all right. Good. Sorry. I called the second number first, and your voice sounds different on this line.
Yes. Very much so. Very much so.
There you go. David, listen, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking the time to help us to understand how wide a world football envelops. You know, for most of us, we assume that, you know, even from an American perspective, many of them don't even know the CFL exists, never mind Serbia. For us Canadians, you know, we know that the WFL existed. We do know that the NFL did, you know, have teams in Europe. What we're unaware of is that football, maybe supported by the NFL directly, has left Europe. Football itself still exists there in a pretty strong way, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, very much so.
What makes it, in your opinion, so strong?
Well, the reason it is it's so strong is because it's a continuing growing sport. And with the sport like American football, how it originated and how it's coming across the world and becoming a global, I want to say, phenomenon right now, it's just, it's amazing. You know, spending some, this would have been my second year in Europe. And it was very huge. It was very huge to see the growth because I came to Europe in 2012. And I stayed back in the States and played arena football, but I returned this past season. And to see the advancement and how quickly it advanced in just merely 2 years, it's just showing that the growth and expansion of American football is really, really, really growing. And it's becoming a global takeover in a way, if you ask me, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it'd be safe to say that the most physical sport that doesn't involve knocking people out, you know, that doesn't require you to knock somebody out, football has to be the most physical sport there is. I think it's more physical than hockey. I think it's more physical than a lot of other sports. Now, not counting MMA and those kinds, because that's just strictly, that's controlled violence. Whereas in football, there's actually a ball involved, and there's actually some finesse involved as well. The violent aspect, yes, does exist. It's tough to be a running back. It's tough to be, not so much anymore, to be a quarterback. But there is a lot of physicality in football, which is different than soccer, where you breathe on a guy and he falls over.
Correct.
So the Europeans are seeing a game that they probably have, you know, outs, you know, that's totally foreign to them, you know, and it must be amazing for you to experience that. But let's roll back the dial a little bit. Let's get back to the beginning of your career and where you started out. We know that you come from Michigan. We know that you're a fellow Detroiter, you know, and
yes.
Tell us about you know, how you started in football. What was the first thing that attracted you to be a football player?
Honestly, I say a lot of the times that football kind of took me. And why I say that is because I was, as growing up, I was just a basketball player. Coming from a basketball family, you know, that's all I did. And my mom actually told me one day, you know, hey, football may make you a little stronger when, you know, you're driving, doing your layups and everything. And so I just said, hey, why not? Let's try it. And I can't lie, the first time I went to football practice, I kind of cried. It wasn't for me, I thought. But
oh, good for you for admitting that. It's very tough, right? It's a very physical game.
Yeah, it really is, and especially starting at a young age. Like, I've been playing football since the age of six. And, you know,
gotcha.
It's one of those things that when I left, like, football practice that day, I fell in love with it right then. You know, I might have been sad about it. I made it felt that it wasn't for me, but it was for me. And from then on, it was just like it took me by storm, man. My mom, she said it again.
No, I'm sorry. Your mom, go ahead, continue.
Yes, my mom, she kind of groomed me herself as far as with sports. So at a very young age, you know, I was incorporated in many various sports. So like at six, so a lot of people may be like, well, he's still young. He's still trying to figure out the sports world. Well, I was very much in the loop of things already, you know. I knew, kind of had a little small picture of what I wanted to be, as if I wanted to be a basketball player, football player, baseball player. So that was pretty cool.
Now, the physicality of the game when you're a youngster, it's tough in football. It is one of the hardest sports to play when you're young because of the difference in physical development of individual children who are on a different schedule as far as size, growth, you know. So there are disadvantages, and if you're one of a, like I was, I played football and I was a receiver, and I was the smallest guy on the team, and the coach used to love how fast I used to run. Well, the reason I ran so fast is because the rest of the guys were much bigger than me, and I didn't want to get creamed, and that was the motivation for me to be very quick and fast. Was it difficult for you? Were you an average-sized young lad, or were you smallish or large or whatever?
I was a smaller guy. You know, I bounced around from many different positions. It took me until I was a senior in high school before I actually found my exact position where, you know, I actually stayed and grown. Like, at a young age, I bounced around everywhere from a defensive tackle to a defensive end to a linebacker to a quarterback to a running back. You know, like, I myself was a smaller guy, but I was very shifty, and I've always been a fast guy. So putting me trying to find a position, it was a little tough for a lot of coaches to figure out, well, maybe he's just a late bloomer, or, you know, what's going to, where can he play at? So I can honestly say I've had the best of both worlds because I've learned pretty much a lot of positions, the jack of all trades, if you want to call it.
Yeah, I hear you. So what was that position that you decided was your position?
Well, going into my senior year of high school, My coaches wound up, they wanted me to try position in spring ball, and they wanted me to try out and play slot receiver. And I was unsure about slot receiver because, I mean, I've played running back before, and I was used to that. And a little bit of my high school, that's what I was a running back and a kickoff and punt returner. But when they told me to try this position, I kind of, like, fell in love with it. When you're growing up, you see guys like Jerry Rice and all these guys are tall giants, and I'm just, you know, a little guy trying to play receiver. It kind of pushed me to really I guess you could say, idolize them and try to play my game and direct it towards those greats in the past.
Well, all those positions you just referred to require a running back attitude. And the most important quality I think you need to be a slot back, a running back, a punt returner, kick returner, is the ability to make other players miss you. And is that maybe your best trait?
Yeah, that's a huge trait of mine, is the ability to make that first guy miss. Growing up, that's one thing that my coaches really, really pressed upon me, and to put that in my head is when you get the ball, you need to make that first guy miss, because you have enough speed to take off and go. And from learning that and just working hard, that's one thing that I can say is a natural instinct. It just became instinct because I really focused on it and worked on it. And just being a kid and being athletic, that was something that, you know, was there. That's one huge trait that I can really say that sticks out about myself.
Let's discuss your college career. Help me understand your college credentials. What college career did you have? I have a list of places you're at, but I'd rather hear from you.
Okay, my freshman year, I actually was recruited by the University of Michigan, and I was at the end of Lloyd Carr's regime when Rich Rodriguez took over. So from there, I had committed to Coach Carr, but when that situation took place and they let Coach Carr go, I wound up heading on down to Minnesota, and I went to the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, Minnesota. And from there, that's where I really, like, took off under the direction of Brett Carlson.
Now, if you were to give us advice, what are the most important things that you learned as a college player in preparation for, you know, advancing to your pro career? What biggest advice would you give others?
Detail. Details in today's game. What I mean by detail in today's game is the technical small. The small things is going to get you where you want to be. And what I mean by small things is film work, knowing your opponent, like studying your opponent, and understanding the small things. If you can do the small things right consistently, those are going to take you very far. The things that sometimes as athletes that we listen to our coaches, and sometimes it goes to one ear and not the other. Simple things, for example, like on the field, if coach says, after every play, run back to the huddle. Or if I call you out the game, run out the game. Those little things, coaches, from what I know right now, is that they like. They want to see somebody that has a high motor and is a coachable person. And so by paying attention to details and the little things and doing those right every time is something that today's young guys that are coming up really, really need to focus on. And also studying your film. Studying film makes it so much easier. So much easier when it comes into the game.
Now, as a player, and what you're talking about, if I can fill in the spaces in my own mind that I think I need to fill in, the idea is that you have to show that you love the game, and the only way to show you love the game is to have it when they look at you. They have to feel that you're enthusiastic about being on the field, that you'll do whatever it takes, and how little or how much doesn't matter, but whatever it takes to advance the team's success. And coaches look for those little things you're talking about quite clearly. If you're running back to the bench, if you're running into the huddle, And if you're doing your routes like it's the pass is intended for you, even though you know it isn't for you, that's the kind of stuff that coaches are looking for, if I can flesh it out a little bit.
Correct. Coaches really, really, really like those type of things. And to, you know, to go on again what you said about the love of the game, you really got to love the game, you know, like you got to really fall in love, like how I put it, and like I tell guys that, you know, I train with, I work with, and guys that I help teach, you got to fall in love with the process. If you fall in love with the process, you're going to fall in love with the game. It's as simple as that. And what I mean by falling in love with the process, I mean falling in love with going to practice, learning, you know, working as hard as you can at practice, because in the game it's going to come natural, but opposed to it coming natural, you've got to fall in love with the process. The things you know, you wouldn't like to do as far as, like, practice, like, oh, I don't want to run these gassers or these sprints. I'm done. I've worked hard. I've prepared for the game like the coach wanted me to, but I don't want to run these sprints. Those are the little things that determine if a player is good and great. If you're that type of guy that is going to say, well, I know I need this much conditioning. I need to be better, not for just myself, but for my team. And a lot of times it's not just performance that makes you a great player and a great teammate. You know what I mean?
I hear you completely. I mean, let's be honest. Football, more than any other sport, requires more preparation. And the mental aspect of the game that you referred to earlier, which is the playbook, well, you didn't refer to the playbook exactly, but I think that's what you were referring to, is getting to know what needs to be done as a unit. There is no sport that requires as tight a unit as football, where every little thing an individual does has an impact on the result. And that's why coaches, you know, that's why there are so many coaches in football. You know, it isn't just one head coach and thank you very much. You know, there are 7, 8, 9, if you're the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, you have maybe 15 coaches because you can afford them. You know, it's difficult at best to be, you know, successful without paying attention to what the coaches tell you. Okay. Now you enter your professional career. Was Serbia or the European Football League your first option, or did you take another option?
Serbia, actually, it was my first option. And, you know, it was one of those things where I wasn't, I guess you could say, sure, because I was at a point in time where I had just had my first child, so I actually didn't know if I was going to even play football anymore. But, you know, just talking with family and just prayer, it all actually came to me, and, you know, I took that route. And, you know, I just kind of put it in God's hands, and I just let him, you know, take the wheel. And when I did that, you know, the first thing that popped up was Serbia, and I figured, hey, let me take this route. Let me see where it's going to take me. And that first year in 2012, I had a phenomenal season. You know, I actually had just lost in voting for the whole league MVP, and it opened so many doors for me. From that moment on, I knew that, you know, this is what I needed to do. This is something that if it wasn't supposed to happen, if it wasn't meant to happen, it wouldn't have happened. And I just kind of continued on my success, and I continued focusing on. And through that, that's when, again, like I said, doors began to open. But Serbia was my first. It was my first, and it was my only option. And I'm not ashamed of it. But it's opened so many doors that I'm happy where I'm at right now.
Good for you. One last question. Now, your professional career, before we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and bring in the rest of the group here. There are a lot of people on the program. A few have bailed, but that's okay. That could be the internet doing that. One last question is, okay, so now you're in Serbia. Where are you today?
Right now, I'm actually training out in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, with one of my former teammates, Marvin Desire. So he was in Serbia with me actually playing.
And your next move in your mind? Are you going back to Serbia? Are you going to try football in North America, indoor? You have had tryouts with indoor teams.
Yeah, there's tryouts coming up soon, but right now, currently, we're really locked in, and we're actually getting ready for the CFL. We're doing heavy training, which we've been doing since we left Europe, and we're just getting ready for the workouts that are, again, will soon begin shortly in a couple of weeks, if I'm not mistaken, and we're trying to get where we want to be, and that one big step is the CFL.
For now, okay. Excellent. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute and 32 seconds, and we'll be back with our brand new friend. And my goodness, it's amazing. Juice. We'll see you in a couple. We'll continue this conversation in a minute and a half.
All right.
The lines of scrimmage in the Canadian game are a yard apart rather than on the tips of the ball. How do you think that would affect play?
Hey, you know, the difference is, hey, NFL, we're like this, right?
Right.
Right here, you're going inside, boy, you're going to get it.
Right.
You're going
right.
Outside, I'm going with you, right?
Right.
Okay. But in ball, now I got to square up. I got to square up and look at you, right? And when you start to make a move, then I'm going to turn my hips, all right? You're going to go? I'm going to go. Go, 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 go.
There you go.
Get out of there. You got it. That's football Canadian style.
How you doing today, sir? Right on. You think the NFL going to three downs is a good idea? You like a 20-second play clock? No fair catch rule up there. A lot more scoring. CFL. Thanks a lot. Not getting much out of this guy. CFL. That's where the action is.
It's all about being Canadian, you know. I met Clemens one night, pinball, and there was about 10 of us, and he remembered everybody's name when he left. He said, Chris, see you later, Mark, see you later, Tim, see you later, and he remembered everybody's name. I was so taken back by that. I was like, you know, here's a person that doesn't have to know who you are, but chooses to because he knows, you know, you're important. It's about being a person. It's what you can do with it, not what you can get out of it, and I think that's good. That's what I like about the CFL.
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
One, two, three.
We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show. One, two, three.
We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Yes, go Frank. All right. Let's we'll start, Mr. Atkins, with our buddy Mike, who introduced you to us. Mike, you want to start with a question? I'm sure he's a busy fella. Well, we got maybe another 14 minutes with him, and then we'll carry on with the program as it normally goes, and that is talking about the CFL. And let me say this, Juice, you're more than welcome to hang around if you wish, but I understand if you're too busy to hang around. You obviously probably need a workout every 10 minutes. I mean, you know, to stay in that CFL game-ready shape.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Mike. Why don't you, I'll give you a chance to ask a question, and all the guys that are still here will get a chance to ask a question.
Hey, Juice, first off, I want to say, man, thanks for coming on the show tonight, man. And, you know, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, man, for over the year, man, you know, that we've been Facebook friends. And one thing I want to know, man, really, because I look at your pictures, man, what is the nightlife like in Serbia, bro?
Nightlife in Serbia. Man, it's amazing. It's not like the USA at all. Like, you know, you have a cutoff time in the US, and when we're out there in Serbia, it's you're in the club at 12, you may not get out of there till 6 in the morning, the sun up, and it's a party all night. It is. It most definitely is a party. It's something that I've never experienced before, but I love every second of it.
I got a question that
right.
I guess sorry, Mike. It's a silly question, but, you know, we hear about, you know, Serbia being a tough place to live because of, war. Did you witness any of that? Was that any of a concern for you, you know, with the, you know, the eastern part of Europe having the difficulties they do and the challenges they have?
Currently, actually, I can say that we did not experience war at all. We were lucky for that one and we're blessed. But one thing we did actually experience, which was pretty crazy, was we had a terrible flood that happened that kind of destroyed a lot of the Serbian countryside, and it took out mm-hmm. a couple cities. And that was that would have happened, I want to say that was in May, early May. That took place, and it kind of postponed football because the country was in a state of emergency because Serbia is such a small country. What had to be done was we had to ask neighboring countries if we could get help from them.
Right.
Greece helped a lot, airplanes for safety to help get people out of their ravaged homes and people that were lost with the water levels. And it was a terrible time for Serbia. It was a very, very terrible time. And a lot of us American imports, we were there and we actually helped in a lot of ways as part of the Red Cross there. That was some things that we took away and we all helped out. Unfortunately, where I was at, in Belgrade, Serbia, we weren't destroyed at all. Because
it's a big
capital.
City.
Yeah, it's a real busy place. So that wasn't one of the places we were actually lucky. But
yeah, the lowlands took a hit.
Yeah, the country of Obrenovac, the city of Obrenovac and the city of Chavez, where they were the ones that were greatly destroyed. And they had football teams there. And
wow.
What we did is we organized because their city was destroyed. What we did was they all came to Belgrade. And because their season was over, because a lot of people, became homeless and without homes, the football players that couldn't make it, we opened up with money and our tax where they're making import a couple of their domestic players. We organized a flag football to help them not think about what's going on in life and just still have fun through the love of football.
That's fantastic. All right, Mike, do you have a question?
Yeah, it's a question and it's a comment, really. Hey, Juice, the last time we talked when you was in the States, you were about to sign with the Raiders, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was the team. But I don't know what happened with the Raiders organization. But when you said that you was going to sign, I was like, okay, cool, he's going to be in the States. And when that didn't happen, man, if I'm not mistaken, dude, I think you were on a plane, 3 days later back over to Serbia? So I'm guessing when the coach found out that you wasn't going to play indoor ball, I bet he was licking his chops and dancing when he knew that you was coming back over there, man.
Yes. He, as a matter of fact, it was a day, actually. Like, it wasn't even a day, I want to say. I left Rochester at nighttime because it just wasn't the type of situation that I was looking for in an organization, and I just didn't feel comfortable. And so I left, and I can honestly say before daylight hit, I was on a bus on the way back to Detroit, Michigan, and I got a phone call from overseas, and I got that contract right as I got home. So within 24 hours, I had a contract, and I was out of there.
Wow. And yeah, you were gone, man. You were gone. And one more question, then I'll let the other guys chime in. As far as playing in a Serbian team, what is the cost of living like over in Serbia, man, for you football players? And second question, are there a lot of American players that's over there playing currently?
The cost of living right now for just the country itself, it's really inexpensive compared to the money that we make out in America. But the thing about that is we're taken care of very well there as far as with housing, and we have food plans. So the little money that we do make, it's enough to get us by in our daily lives. Again, we're not making CFL dollars, NFL dollars. In a lot of cases, AFL-1, we're not making those kind of dollars. But we're making enough to get by and enough to, do what we need to do. I think it's bad for us. The American imports that are out there right now, currently in Serbia this year, was the largest amount of American imports that that Serbia has seen. And not only Serbia, but Europe in general. This was a big year for Europe. Again, like I said before, It is advanced. From 2 years ago to right now, it's a lot of Americans that are in Europe playing American football, hoping to expand their growth. So if that's just in 2 years, imagine 2 more years what's going to happen. So that is something that is very big, and that is something to pay attention to, that this year Europe was the biggest, all of Europe, that this was the biggest year for they had the most American imports, and Serbia as well had the most American imports.
The busy year for American football players. Chris Jones, you have a question for our guest?
He's the coach of Edmonton.
Who is?
Chris Jones.
Oh, Chris. Oh, okay, Christopher. CJ.
I just don't want to get confused
don't you
with
wish,
the coach.
Don't
okay?
you wish you were? Don't you wish you were?
No, he talks funny.
He does talk funny. He sounds like that first commercial we played. That guy in that first commercial. The more I hear that commercial, the more I think of Chris Jones, Christopher, Chris Jones.
He's from Louisiana. Y'all
and come
back
okay.
to Louisiana. And
that's right.
Can.
Come
no,
and have
I'm
some
good.
Chipping.
I'm just listening away to Juice, and you guys are all kind of nailing all, anything that's really important here. So I'll just sit in the background here and continue on. I'm good with it. Evening, Juice. Long time. We've been friends on Facebook long time. First time to chat with you, bro.
Thank you. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful tonight.
Good.
Our next guy, Schmitty, Storm, you got a question for our guest?
Not too much. It's kind of interesting to know what goes on, not in the States and not in the CFL sort of thing, but across half the world sort of thing. But not too much. I don't know much about...
Are you surprised by the fact that that American football exists there still, knowing that the WFL, the NFL sort of left, but still tries doing stuff in England and in some other countries, that in Germany and such? They have those exhibition games. They're going to be doing some exhibition games. So, you know, they're still promoting football in Europe.
Tell you the truth, I just stick with the CFL and the NFL when it's on, and I don't. It's not that I don't care about what happens across the world, sort of thing, but I'm just stuck on CFL and NFL. And
understood.
Not to be a party pooper, but I'm just saying.
Okay, well, we'll move on from the party pooper to the man on the cliff, Charles. You got a question for a guest?
Yeah, I was just curious, kind of going with what Schmitty said. To your knowledge, you might have answered this already because I had to step away for a moment, but to your knowledge, the North American League, like the CFL and the NFL, do they ever at any time send scouts to, you know, view some of these games, maybe looking for new talent? Do they ever have scouts there, you know, looking at your games and some of the players playing over there?
Or even film.
Yeah, there's actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. There actually is. There are actually scouts that do come out to the games, and just a quick note for that, I'll let you know that there is the Oakland Raiders have a sister team in Austria called the Sparkle Raiders. That's their sister team, and so that's one huge team. And as far as I know, there's one more, the Rappington Vikings. Are affiliated with the Minnesota Vikings.
Wow.
And that's something I just found out this year. And there's also a league that it just started up. It's in Israel. I know they did a postpone because of the war that's going on currently, but it was 2 years. They've been doing it 2 years now that Mr. Kraft, the owner of
New England Patriots.
Yep, correct.
Robert Kraft.
It doesn't matter. I know who he meant. We know who he meant. We know who he meant.
Okay.
New England Patriots owner.
Correct. He owns that football league right now.
Wow. There you
the
go.
The entire league.
Yeah.
Wow.
The whole league.
Well, I learned something new today.
Well, I'm surprised, that they play football in Serbia, but I shouldn't be surprised because of, you know, London has the big moment every year where they bring in, I think even again this year, they're going to be bringing in more NFL teams to play exhibition games in Europe. So it shouldn't be a surprise. Now, we've got another minute or so left with you, a minute or two. Okay, this is your chance. This is your chance, Juice, to sell yourself to a CFL team in our league. You got a minute to convince us what, consider this like a combine. What do you have to offer a CFL team that you think should allow you the opportunity to sign a contract with the CFL or at least give, be given an opportunity to try out for the team? What assets do you bring to the table?
Okay. First thing is first, I'm coachable. Second thing is I'm a high motor. I'm always 0 to 100 no matter what the case is. Third thing is I am very precise when it comes to route running. As also working with speed, that's my game. Speed is my game. I've watched CFL film. I've watched the games. I understand what the CFL is about. I bring that to the table. As well as me being a 5'8" undersized receiver, I bring the abilities and talents that the same receiver that 6'3" bring. The same jumping ability, the same quickness, and the same mentality. I understand that football is a game that is played every down. And if I'm not the one going for a go-ahead touchdown, I'm probably one of the guys that is key for getting a key block on the situation. And I understand that in this game, to make it, is unselfishness. And you've got to be, again, 0 to 100, no matter what the case is. I'm one person that is not, I'm one person you can yell, scream at, and I'm going to give you the best. You're going to bring the best out of me by pushing me. I come from a blue-collar city in Detroit, Michigan, so the only thing I know is hard work. Compared to another...
And that's the most important thing. I just posted, I don't know how it'll work, Mike, but I posted some of the links he had. If you want to see some of Juice's work, you can check it out on YouTube. And help us to make sure that we look in the right place. Do we look for David Akins the second, David Juice Akins? How do we find what you've got to display for us and for the viewers and listeners out there?
On YouTube, you can actually look up Juice Akins, A-K-I-N-S. Again, that is A-K-I-N-S, and that's Juice Akins. You can type that in YouTube, and I have tons of highlight films that come up. Tons, and I mean tons. It'll mostly, all of it will be me. Every football clip that's going to come up, it will be me. Because I post all my highlight tapes to YouTube.
Awesome. Awesome. I want to thank you for taking the time to be on our program. Mike, I thank you for finding Juice and sharing Juice's story with us. I really am surprised that there is a team in Serbia. But I'm glad to hear that football is that popular, that there are that many opportunities. We all know with the CFL that there are more than enough players to provide, you know, a real quality football league in the CFL. And we all know as well that there are a lot of other leagues that have players that that play as well as CFL players, as do some CFL players play as well as NFL. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's awesome that this is another opportunity for a guy like yourself, Juice, to put himself out there, to follow his dream about the game that he loves and grew up loving. And I'm really happy to hear that there are other options for you. And I wish you the best of luck in the near future and in the distant future. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
Hey, Juice, thanks for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it, bro.
Thank you for even just considering me. I appreciate that a lot.
It is our pleasure. David Juice Akins II. You can find him under Juice Akins on YouTube, and you can check out what he has to do. And what he's done, I should say. All right, when we come back, we're gonna talk CFL. That's right. It's still happening. Yeah, the CFL is all cool. It is the league of choice, as you probably heard from Juice himself. And when we come back, we're going to talk CFL. We're going to review what happened last week, and we're not going to spend much time talking about the Argos.
Hello, everyone. I'm Candid Frank Live and a member of the Argo Lifers.
a fan supporter group of the Toronto Argonauts of the Canadian Football League. As a group, we have been dedicated to working hard at Argo games, screaming, yelling, and doing whatever it takes to distract the opposition in the CFL. Guess what? We have been noticed by many, including the Toronto Argonauts themselves. In fact, we have been noticed by you, the fans, as well. Even the players and coaches and all the Argo staff are pleased and appreciate our support. So much so that the season tickets are being offered to you, you, and you for next season for very close to half price. What do you have to do to share in this opportunity? Just use my name, Candid Frank Live Stanishi, when calling Argo sales rep Chris Andreoli at 416-341-2793. You heard it, nearly half price from Chris Andreoli at 416-341-2793. Just say Candid Frank Live Stanishi sent you. That number again, 416-341-2793. I hope I'll be yelling next to you in 2014. Argos!
And all you have to do is go to CFL.ca, and you can pick any of your teams, and I'm talking about, of course, the Montreal Alouettes, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the Ottawa Red Blacks, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, the Calgary Stampeders, the Edmonton Eskimos, and, of course, the British Columbia Lions, otherwise known as the BC Lions. And you hit the link there, and you can find some tickets for those teams as well. Yes, I'm an Argo fan. Not ashamed to be, even right now, where it really hurts to be an Argo fan. We have a moment of silence for the way the season's going. Okay, that's enough. It's been an up-and-down season, guys. It's been one of those seasons where, really, I think more than any other year, other than Winnipeg and Edmonton and Calgary, now the teams have been inconsistent. Now, will Winnipeg and of course, Edmonton prove to be inconsistent in the future? We don't know when the pressure starts to bear. This is the beginning of the year. This is when coaching staffs and the motivation of players basically wins games early. Now we're going to get that we're going down the road where, you know, the dissection and the surprises that some teams have had for other teams may be worked on. Let me first ask you guys about the games. We'll talk one game at a time, and Calgary Stampeders beat the Edmonton Eskimos, 26-22. Full value for that victory. That Calgary Stampeder defense is looking more and more difficult to penetrate. And maybe we'll start with the Calgary Stampeders fan, Storm Schmidt. Storm, you have to be very happy with the way your team's playing.
Well, I did and I didn't. But, the defense shows that they're the best in the league, and the offense sputtered. But you know what? Two games in a row, defense won, and you can't be doing that all year.
Yeah.
And I was happy with the win, of course, and the only undefeated team in the CFL, which is great, but there's something missing. Something missing.
Cornish?
Well, yeah, that could be it. And now signing Hugh Charles, Cornish might be out for the whole year.
Oh, really?
That's what I'm thinking, yep. That's what I'm hearing anyways in the Calgary area.
Well, some suggest that the Calgary Stampeders are a run-first team. They're a team that, you know, the ball goes to the running back to establish the pass. And so far, I think that's Huffnagel being ahead of the curve, if you will. Once the passing game, you know, or Bo Levi Mitchell starts to get figured out a little better, they're going to need the running game even more, which is probably why they're bringing in Hugh Charles, even though he does tend to fumble the ball once, which isn't good enough in Saskatchewan.
It happens, though, right?
Yeah.
A different team, you know, can change the whole world, right?
This is a great running back with a great history, and he is one of the better running backs in recent memory in the CFL. What do you think, Christopher?
I'm not arguing too much with what you guys are saying here at all. The only thing that I'd like to bring back is what I brought to the show last time was Calgary also is activating Martel Mallett as a scat back in the Stampeders backfield. So I think that they're going to have a two-headed monster coming out of this backfield really quickly.
And is Hugh Charles
going to take over the other position that you're referring to. One
is he that much of a north-south runner? He's not really, is he? He's not a power back, not the way
so
that Cornish is or
him?
Andrew Harris is. What's that?
So why'd they sign him?
I don't know.
So I
think they're looking for options right now and either trying to find out which is going to work for them best or the fact they're just trying to get him off the marketplace because they signed him to the practice roster. They didn't sign him to the active roster.
Right.
So, you know, he's not an active player at this point in time. Mallett's on the practice roster as well. So, you know, I don't know what their plan is here.
You can't sign
but
a guy off another team's practice roster.
No. So, you know, it's kind of like, you're buying it so that nobody else can have them.
Yeah. It's one of those moves where you're not really trading to use them. You're trading them to keep away from the opposition.
Is that the case? I don't know. John Cornish has gone for at least 6 games, if not the season. He is not doing well. I don't want to say anything bad about that in trying to speculate longer than this year, but he's not doing well.
Okay.
And that's very unfortunate because, you know, I'm not a fan of John Cornish, but he is the best running back in the CFL today, and this league will miss him. We'll miss
and
him for 6 games,
yes.
Never
gotcha.
Mind the rest
gotcha.
Of the season.
But specifically, can we go back to the Calgary-Edmonton Eskimo result, 26-22 by Calgary? Your definition of what happened that day and why Edmonton
it
lost.
It wasn't a dominant victory by Calgary by any stretch of the means.
No, it wasn't.
It was much better than that 10-7 victory over Hamilton the week before. But, they didn't come out and say, hey, we are the best and this is why. Because they didn't dominate Edmonton in any stretch of the way. So,
but they did prove that they were the better team that day.
The better
day.
Team. They're
but
the
I think their
team,
experience.
Period.
What about their experience? I think their experience, you know, in being a winning team and Edmonton's learning to win. Right, that's another disadvantage that Edmonton had.
Yeah, Calgary's missing some key components of their winning team. And they have to learn how to win without those. And right now they're just fumbling along. It's kind of like preteen sex, where they're
okay.
they're winning, but are they? You know, that sort of thing, right? They really don't know what they're doing.
I guess,
they're just being
I
successful.
Guess. How about you, Cliff? Oh, sorry, Charles.
Yeah, neither team was very good offensively in that game. That game, for the most part, was won by the Calgary Stampeder defense. They were the ones that gave up the least amount of points. I mean, Bo Levi Mitchell, only 124 yards passing. Not exactly a great night. In fact, this is 2 weeks in a row now where it's been the Calgary defense that's won the game. And, you know, granted, that's a very, very good defense. And I'm figuring with Cornish out and some other key parts, they're going to have to keep winning some games for them because the offense is not really firing on all cylinders. And, Bo Levi Mitchell's still going to struggle, I think, from time to time. He's played pretty well so far, but he's struggled the last couple of games. Edmonton, they didn't have it either. That was probably Mike Riley's worst game of the year. And, I thought their defense played well, not as well as Calgary's. And overall, it was both really defense versus defense, and the better defense won.
And I think Edmonton also suffered from the dropsies too much on defense
yeah,
and
there
offense.
Was drop
they had out. A lot of chances. They had a lot of chances they wasted. They wasted a lot of chances. But that's neither
they
here
did.
Or there.
I
that's
agree
all
with
part
that.
Of the
and,
game, right?
You know, that's a sign of, again, another young quarterback still, you know, going along and maybe not 100% there yet. And but like you said, there were some drops and Edmonton's receiving corps got to be better. They really do.
Yeah, they do. They do. And, you know, I don't think Stamps is healthy. And, they have a, you know, and he doesn't look, he did not look impressive. You know, he did not
one
look impressive.
One catch for 5 yards. That
yeah,
was
and if he was healthy, that game would have been closer for sure. Mike, how do you feel about the game? Oh, sorry, Cliff, finish, and then Mike, you're next.
Well, I'm just saying, if he's healthy, he's going to be the go-to guy. He's going to have a lot more than one catch. So, that was just my last point.
All right. Calgary, Edmonton, I'm going to go back to what you guys were talking about. with the signing of Hugh Charles. The reason I think Calgary signed Hugh Charles, for one, you know, we all know Cornish is down. We don't know when he's coming back. And Walters is injured too. So Jock Sanders can't carry the load, man. I'm sorry. I like Jock, but Jock can't carry the load. So they needed to bring somebody in to try to get him acclimated with the offense to see if they can get some type of running game going. Now, if Walters wasn't injured, they wouldn't have signed Hugh Charles. Hugh Charles would be sitting out there waiting for work. And I agree with you guys. It wasn't a big, real big win, but it was a W. Bo Levi had 120-some yards. We all can agree that Bo Levi is the man in Calgary, not Drew Tate. Hello? Hello? Anybody?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, okay. And Calgary is running on all cylinders right now, man. And Edmonton, they're doing good. And I agree with you, Fred Stamps didn't look good at all. I don't know if it's an injury.
I think he's suffering. It's an injury. He's still hurting. Did you see the? I don't know if you watched the game, but I'm gonna point at one specific play where there was a ball that normally. Another one of those highlight Fred Stamps catches was there for him, and he didn't even try.
Mm-hmm.
He let it get past him.
Nope.
You know, he could have dove for it and done what he's done over and over and over again, but he didn't succeed this time.
Right. If Fred Stamps is hurt, man, my thing is, I know a lot of guys like to go out there and play hurt because they're dedicated to the game, but do not injure yourself more where you won't be able to come back and play during the rest of the season. It's a long season. Go ahead and sit out, get healthy, and come back strong. I mean, you got Darius Bowman. I mean, come on, man. The guys is playing on our cylinders. So, you know, the receiving core is going to be there. Sit out,
you know,
rest up.
You're totally right. You know, Mike, the way Darius Bowman is playing, the guy is playing lights out. If Fred Stamps was even just 50, and I'm saying he's less than 50% of what he normally is right now. I'd go as far as saying that he's barely 25% of what he normally is. If Buddy was at 50%, if Fred Stamps was at 50% or 60 or 65% of his normal, you know, ability, there's no way Calgary would have won. There's just no way. I hate to say that, but Stamps was a non-factor. And to me, that's not what he is. That's not what he's ever been.
Yeah, you're right, Frank, and that's why if it's an undisclosed injury, go ahead and sit him out, put him on the shelf, one or two games, or just give him a day off, man. Let him go ahead and rest up and get well, because you're going to need fresh stamps in the long run when
down
you get
the
down to the
yeah.
12, 13, 14, 15, 16-game season. You're going to need him in the playoffs.
Mike,
you're going to need fresh stamps.
Don't you think it might also be, and this is the tough part about those types of injuries, you know, there are certain injuries that players get over physically but have difficulty getting over mentally. And in my opinion, this might
yes,
be
sir.
One of those diseases where he's one of these injuries, my goodness. I'm calling it a disease because it's a mental disease, really, that he's suffering, and it is a concussion. And I think, you know, that's we've seen over and over again that players, I don't want to say – play with fear, but I will say they play with a lot of hesitation, and a receiver cannot hesitate. He has to make his move as soon as it appears, you know, the opportunity shows itself. Any hesitation, and he ain't making the catch. And that's what Fred Stamps looks like. He looks like a guy who's hesitating, and subconsciously, not necessarily consciously, is not ready to play, but he has to work his way into it. That's my hope. My hope for Fred Stamps and the Calgary Stampeders is that he is just in a position where he has to regain the confidence that he's indestructible. Because without that, greatness like his, like Riley, this is greatness that's based on no fear. And any kind of fear when you're on the football field, you're not going to be successful.
You're really not, Frank. And you know what else that came to mind, too, as we were just talking? I'm just guessing here, speculating. I'm not saying it is true or it isn't. But maybe the offensive scheme that Chris Jones is putting in with the Edmonton Eskimos is not fitting Fran Stemps as the number one, but putting him as the number two and Darius at the number one. Because he's been the number one go-to guy since the season started.
Yeah, but I kind of think it's like, you know, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, if you're Riley and if you're Jones, you know, you're going to keep going where, what you know, you keep going at what works for you, right? And if Fred Stemps,
your bread and butter.
You know, you keep going where you win, right? Where the play is made. And I think, you know, Stamps isn't ready yet to make that big move. When we see him make a Fred Stamps catch, we're going to know that mentally he's prepared and ready to play. And that's what I think he's lacking.
And physically.
Yeah, go ahead. Storm, you watched the game. I mean, you have to admit that Stamps did not look impressive.
No, he missed some plays like you guys just hit it on the nail on the head where he just wasn't himself, and it was kind of strange to see because, you know, he's a great player even though he plays for Edmonton, but he's a great player, but yeah, he just wasn't himself. And to tell you about that game itself, one quick thing and then you could go into your next games, but the turning point was Chris Jones with that fake punt and with 20 seconds left in the second quarter. That just did Edmonton in right there, period. I mean, I was happy with it, but I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'll end it on that note, but it was just strange to see.
Very little seemed to work for Edmonton. A lot seemed to work for Calgary. And this is not to take away anything from Calgary because the game gets decided on any given day on how you play. It's not Calgary's responsibility to hedge their bet because one of the opponents is hurting, because every team has players that are hurting. And we talked about John Cornish, of course. So, you know, I don't think Calgary can feel sorry for Edmonton and Fred Stamps. Every team has to go through that kind of situation, those kinds of challenges. And they have to overcome them. Otherwise, you know, they're not great teams. You know, good teams under good circumstances, play well. The great teams do it when things aren't quite on their side. And that's what, you know, Calgary has shown us so far this season. You know, I think they were lucky, too, that they had a week off because they were able to, you know, the coaching staff were able to deal with the absence of Cornish. And I think that was a very fortunate situation for them. While they found out Cornish wasn't part of the lineup, they also had plenty of opportunity to come up with a plan, you know, that worked without his help. And that's great. You know, that's just an opportunity that they took advantage of. Many teams would have been in the same position and wouldn't capitalize the way Huffnagel, who is a great tactician, and, you know, as far as their defense is concerned, the defensive coordinator, doesn't matter how old he gets, he's what, in his 26th, 27th year. You know, Stubler came from BC, was here in Toronto as a head coach, and this guy keeps coming up with great defenses. It's amazing. He just doesn't go dry. It's amazing how well he does in motivating players who are much younger than him and giving them the tools to be successful. I'm very impressed with Rich Stubler. I really am.
Yeah, I give him a lot of credit.
I underestimated his ability. I underestimated him so much, as I did Calgary. Anyone want to conclude the conversation on Calgary and Edmonton before we go to the next game?
The only thing I want to...
Okay,
you want
CJ first. Yeah, CJ, you first.
The only thing I want to say is the fake punt that Chris Jones did in out of the end zone was a ballsy move. And they blew it by half a yard. If he had got that, he would have been a genius.
People would have
been talking about this for months of how ballsy a move that was and how wonderful it worked and how they caught Calgary napping and everything else. But because it came up half a yard short, he's a goat.
And only by virtue of the camera angle.
I would rather have my coach trying something like that than to be sitting back and playing it safe.
When you look at the replay, it looked like he might have made it because he wasn't short of the, what was it, the 16-yard line?
He was short, Frank, but it
he
wasn't
was half
by
yard,
much.
Half yard.
Yeah. Okay. But it looked from one angle there like maybe he got it. You know, it was very close. He just,
but,
you know, but regardless.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a
you know,
ballsy
it was one of those situations. It was one of those situations where the officials cannot turn it over unless there's, you know, absolute proof that the call was wrong,
yeah.
as you know. So,
yes.
you know, that's all I'm trying
yeah.
to say is that
the
it was.
Call was wrong.
No, no, no. I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm just saying it could
yeah.
have gone the other way if there was a different camera angle and it showed a little different scenario because it came down to half a yard, in my opinion. It came down because it looked like the ball landed on the line.
Yeah.
You know,
but
it looked.
It was a turning point. It was a turning point in the game, and it was monumental
brilliant.
For Calgary to for that victory and everything else.
Brilliant.
But it wasn't
it
a bad
was
call
brilliant.
On Chris Jones's part. I totally disagree with anybody saying it was
yeah,
a bad call. I thought it was really ballsy.
I'll say one more thing. I haven't seen that in years, but you know what? You get 20 seconds or 24 seconds left in the half. You're down at your 10-yard line or wherever the heck it was. And what field position do you get yourself into field goal range to kick a field goal? That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why not just punt it and Calgary, you know, like, we'll probably just knee it down or whatever sort of thing, and Calgary doesn't even get a field goal in the position. So
yeah,
they
yeah.
should have given them up 2 points. They should have given up 2 points and gone for it
yeah.
and
well,
kicked
exactly.
off to them, and they would have won the game. We all know that mathematics on this thing is it was a major screw-up. But it was an awful
yeah.
Well, you know.
CJ, if it was midfield, that'd be a great play. But at your 10-yard line and with 20 seconds,
well,
or 24 seconds left in the first half, it's just...
Okay, well, we can agree to disagree, and we can leave it there and move on, and move on to the next
yeah.
game. And that game would be Winnipeg Blue Bombers 23, BC Lions 6. Christopher, were you surprised with that result?
Absolutely. It was disgusting. It was an absolute no-show by the BC offense. They just did not come to play. Our defense was stellar, kept Winnipeg out of the end zone all but one play, and they just got tired because the offense wasn't on the field at all, and you cannot blame them. I mean, what did Winnipeg got 5 or 6 field goals in the game?
Their
kicker's going to be special teams player of the week.
Oh. If he keeps playing the way he has, he'll be special teams player of the year as
yeah.
a rookie.
I mean, we just didn't – BC just did not show up to play. Winnipeg didn't beat us. We handed them a game. And,
but it's
and,
been
you know,
that kind
you,
of season.
The, it
it's
has.
Been that kind
it's been
of
scary.
Season. For everybody.
And,
I mean,
and you got
just,
you got the Bomber
me.
Fans now who are just talking about, you know, pumping up their chests and how wonderful they are that they kept BC to 6 points and everything else. You didn't keep BC to 6 points. They shot themselves in the foot twice. And, you know, it's totally different. And I'm still saying Winnipeg's, if they make the playoffs, it's going to be the crossover.
Yeah, I think Andrew Harris said it right. You know, basically the inference was that they didn't show up. And he himself was embarrassed for himself and the team on how they played. And he made that basically public. He wasn't very shy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it
he wasn't
gonna
very
be like
shy.
That in Calgary.
Yeah, well we're going to find out. Speaking of Calgary, how did you feel about that game? I know it didn't involve your team. Winnipeg, BC Lions, Winnipeg 23, BC 6. What'd you think of that, Storm?
He said it right. I was surprised. I was very surprised.
How about you, Mike?
I was surprised, too. I thought it would have been maybe 27-20, but Chris, my friend, summed it up. They just didn't show up. I'm not going to say it was one player's fault. It was the whole team.
Yeah,
granted, they did keep them out the end zone, but, you know, the field goals, man, I mean, they just didn't show up. But I look for a better outing next game.
Yeah, hopefully
yeah.
that'll be the case. It really has been one of those seasons where teams have really been, it's been the Jekyll and Hyde season for a lot of teams. I mean, total Jekyll and Hyde. Unbelievably
I mean,
how. Go ahead.
Honestly, who thought Hamilton was going to be where they are this year?
Exactly.
It's just been a weird season.
Totally weird. How about you, Mr. Cliff?
Did.
Charles?
Yeah, well,
on that
I'm going to pretty much echo what Chris said. I mean, any sort of offensive attack for the Lions that night, they win that game probably pretty easily. I thought the defense was great. They held Grigsby to 19 yards on 15 carries.
The hottest running back in the CFL right now.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the defense, Chris is right, they were tired by the end of the night because the offense had numerous chances to score, and evidently they would always screw up. Kevin Glenn threw not one but two interceptions into double coverage when the Lions were deep in Winnipeg's territory. They just shot themselves in the foot. In one of the early drives, Kevin Glenn had Manny Arsenal wide open. If Arsenal gets the ball, he's long gone, and it misses them by inch. They just shot themselves in the foot too many times. The defense tired out, and it gave the Bombers enough to get the points to win the game.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you can't blame it on Kevin Glenn. Nope. You can't blame it on Kevin Glenn. There was at least six good drops by the receivers that were catchable balls.
The offensive line, which played very well the week before against Montreal, started getting holes in it again. Kevin Glenn didn't have time. He was getting rushed. He was getting hit. He had no time to do anything. There were people out there that they were upset with Kevin Glenn. He wasn't the problem. The problem was the offensive line and too many blown opportunities.
Yep.
Which seems to be the regular refrain with a lot of teams. Later we're going to go to another subject which pertains to this whole thing, and I was going to ask your opinions on it after we finish with the review of the games. So basically, BC didn't look good this week, and you know, we're not full value for what we think they're capable of. I think we all agree that BC didn't play to their ability, and but
not at all.
Still, the Bombers played well enough to win, and we all know the difference between good teams and great teams is whether you play well or not, you'll win. That's the important thing that needs to be considered. We have another caller in. Who's the new guy, a new person in?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, it's Tammy.
Hey, Tammy, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Well, good timing,
hey, Tammy.
Because we were just talking about winning.
Hi, guys. You were. Sorry I got on so late.
Don't worry about it, Tammy. So tell us. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do all the games for you. It'll get you caught up. The first game, tell us your view on the Calgary victory over Edmonton. How do you summarize what happened on that evening?
Grateful. Well, I think Calgary has a much stronger offense than Edmonton does.
Defense, you mean?
No,
Calgary? No, I mean offense.
Is that because of Bo Levi Mitchell and the receivers? Because
well,
they don't have much of a running game, right? They don't have much of a running game.
They don't. But he's not bad. But Edmonton, I don't think Edmonton's – I think Edmonton's far from done, though.
What do you mean?
I think Edmonton will overpower BC.
In other words, finish ahead of them?
Yeah. If Blue Way stays out a little while longer.
Okay. How about the Winnipeg-BC Lions game? The general consensus while you were calling is and was that BC played well below their ability, and Winnipeg won basically because BC handed the game to them. Do you agree with that thinking?
No. But I wouldn't, would I, Frank?
No. Hey, listen, it's all about opinion, right?
Right. Well, you know what? I think BC's got a lot of good players. Like Arsenal, he's, like, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good, but you can't depend on one player. And they're, I think the Bombers from the get-go, and not just because they're my team, because I was pretty nervous. I was wondering, you know. But it says a lot about their coach when they come off such a bad loss, how he picked them. They got picked up right, you know, where they were before that. So I think that says a lot for them. They have improvements to do on their offense, but I think BC without Lule is lost. But Arsenal is amazing.
Well, he's practicing again, so that could change.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And down the schedule a little bit. So I guess what you're saying is, and if I can interpret what you're saying, Winnipeg this year is different than last year because they don't get rattled. They've got a great coach. They've got a great quarterback. And they've got a system in place that doesn't allow them to slide into losing strings. And they put it behind them a lot better than they did in past years, right?
Yeah, especially last year. I think that has a lot to do with O'Shea, though.
Okay, we'll start with you. And any chance to see the Ottawa-Hamilton game? Hamilton won 33-23. Do you have any view on that game? Did you get a chance to see it? Was Hamilton full value? Why did Hamilton win? Why did Ottawa lose? Do you have any input?
Well, there were so many changes, but I think the change in quarterback was meant the most, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I never know how to say his name.
Lefebvre.
How do you say
Lefebvre?
It? Lefebvre.
Yeah.
I think he's a lot better than Mazzoli. I think Mazzoli is – I'm not glad he got hurt, per se, you know what I mean? But I'm glad he's sidelined right now because I think Lefebvre is a better – I think so.
He was dangerous.
I know Mazzoli was great in the States, but.
And he was dangerous. You know, he was passing well. The running game was working for them. Hamilton was working on all cylinders. And you know, a bit of the Riley thing was going on with Lefebvre where, you know, he was basically softening the defense by running with the ball. And he did a great job of distracting the defense to the point where when he felt like passing, players were available. When he felt like handing the ball off, there was room for the running back to make some plays. And I think that's an important thing and why I think Caleros was brought in by Austin into Hamilton. We're watching Lefebvre basically play like people expected, as I expect,
right,
Caleros to play. To be evasive and run and be another running back, another Riley. There seem to be a few of those in the league, but we've always said the CFL is a league where the quarterbacks need to be mobile. And this has been the mobile quarterback year, that's for sure.
Well, Frank, do you think you should – I thought he ran too much.
I think a fair statement would be this, is that he automatically is programmed that when he goes out there, because of the last couple of years – he's automatically programmed to think, oh, yeah, I'm out on the field. I got to run. That's what the coach wants me to do. So, you know, he's pretty much he's got to relearn the game a little bit mentally, and under pressure. And, you know, he knows he can do it, and he's confident about it. And he's a big enough guy, and he's very quick that, you know, he's bigger than most of the guys that are hitting him. So, you know, maybe he thinks, maybe he thinks he can handle it. And, you know, Riley's the same way. But they do it to break down the defense. And that's the reason why they do it. And it worked awesome for Lefebvre. It worked great. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, it did.
Hamilton.
Well, with Hamilton hey, how you doing? Hamilton and Ottawa, I kind of figured Dan Lefebvre was going to be the starter for one. I always liked Dan Lefebvre. Y'all guys know since last year, I like Lefebvre. He's a Michigan guy, Central Michigan, and I watched him in college. Mazzoli, the pros on Mazzoli is he does have a strong arm, but the cons on Mazzoli is let's face it, guys, he can't see over the offensive line, man. He got to scramble out to try to get a pass, see over the offensive line. And it was just a matter of time before Kent Austin was going to make that change because you can't go into another game with Mazzoli's quarterback and you're constantly taking an L. I mean, Dan Lefebvre right now is working on all cylinders, and I'm going to be the first one to say it first, and you can quote me on this. If Lefebvre get three more wins, regardless if Caleros come back, Lefebvre is going to be the starter the rest of the year.
And would it go as far as releasing Caleros or just have him as –
If I'm Bob Young, yes, I will release him. You're paying this guy.
They're
going
to have to wait till he's healthy, right?
Yeah,
they're
going
to have to wait till he's healthy.
But if he struggles, if you put him back in there and he struggles, and Lefebvre comes in there and does what he did again, at the end of the year, Caleros will be released because you're not going to pay a guy $450K to sit on your bench or be your backup or cannot produce any wins.
Well, only time will tell in that regard. But another thing, I think, in fairness to Caleros and in fairness to Mazzoli, actually, the leg up belongs to Lefevre. He has been involved in this system for 3 years now. He knows, you know, in Hamilton. He's been in Hamilton for 3 years, and the full 2 seasons of this year and the season thus far, he knows what Austin expects more than any of the other quarterbacks, I think.
Well, Frank, I'm going to tell you something. With Mazzoli, I mean, not Mazzoli, but Lefevre right now, and I could have said this last year when he'd been since the CFL, he was the best NFL backup to come to the CFL and play.
Okay.
I mean, you're a backup to what's the guy named Chicago? I can't even think his name, man. The quarterback, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy coming from him, and then you go to Cleveland, and you're back up to Carson Palmer. I mean, Cincinnati, and you're back up to Carson Palmer when he was there. So, come on, man. You're not going to get that many reps.
Absolutely not. Let's go to Christopher.
And wanted to play.
Christopher, what do you think?
Where are we? We're talking about Ottawa and Caleros and Lefevre.
Well,
we're talking about Lefevre.
If Lefevre
keeps playing, Mike is 100% right. If Lefevre keeps playing the way that he does, Caleros, done. I mean, Caleros came out at the beginning of the season, showed us nothing of anything that he had last year. And mind you, neither did Hamilton. Hamilton didn't protect him at all. I mean, he was on the carpet more than he was standing upright. So you may not actually be able to blame that on Caleros, but Lefevre is doing a much better job of moving the pocket around and making that Tiger Cat offense do something with it. The Red Blacks played a respectable game. They didn't show us anything new. They didn't disappoint. They didn't do anything else.
They played what
we expected them to be.
They did show us something new. They showed us that Campbell could make a decision that was, again, another one of those risky decisions, right, with 3 minutes left, you know, third and long, and he decided to go for it.
Yeah. Well,
it didn't work.
You do what you got to do to win a football game, right? And, I mean,
we've got a lot
of young rookie coaches that's the direction you wanted to go and talk about the rookie coaches and the decisions that they make.
Well, these are cool. And it was a testament to, I think, it was a testament to the fact that Lefevre was playing so well, they didn't want to give the ball to Lefevre. Because they knew if they gave
it back to Lefevre
at that point, they didn't want to give it to him because they knew he was just going to ram it down their throat. And that's what it looked like to me.
What did he have, 350 yards? Passing?
There you go. And he ran
and
for over 100.
And another 100 on the ground?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so he ripped them apart.
He was a monster. He was a total monster. Yeah. Storm, what do you think?
I didn't watch too much of the game because I was having a garage sale, but what I watched was, and I said at the beginning of the season, was Caleros is not going to – this is before he got injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lefevre, I told you from day one that he's gonna take the season. He's going to take the Hamilton Ticats to game 18.
Okay. Fair enough. How about you, Mr. Cliff? Charles?
Yeah, very impressed with Lefevre. I thought outstanding. He did it on the ground. He did it through the air. I think we got to be a little bit cautious, see him do it a few more times. I mean, we've seen guys come in, have one great game, and then just tail off. So certainly we can't anoint him right away as the guy that's going to take Caleros out. But certainly it was a very impressive performance. And granted, not a great defensive team playing against Ottawa. They're a decent defense, but they did give up 558 yards total offense. So
yes.
Certainly impressive. Like to see Lefevre do it a few more times, but certainly was very impressed with what I saw from him.
Well, it's the same definition that you could throw out there for Willie, for Caleros, the guy that he took over from, you know, Riley. These are all young, and Bo Levi Mitchell. These are all young guys who established they can play well. And to your point, the question becomes over the long haul, do they play well consistently? And are they able to lead the team in the same manner they do once in a while, pretty much all the time? Of course, that's what separates the good young quarterbacks with the great young ones. And I got to tell you, there's at least two great young quarterbacks that are going to come out of this this season. And I wouldn't be surprised if one of the great young quarterbacks ended up in the Grey Cup. I can't believe how well These young guys have continued to pick it up. Last year, I joked and called it the year of the backup quarterback. This is the year of the rookie quarterback, it seems. So, you know, the progression is taking place. I love my Ricky Ray, and I wouldn't trade him for a second. I wouldn't trade him for $1 million. You know, I love him to death. You know, but right now, the way it looks, if one's to be honest, you know, the older quarterbacks aren't having as much success as the younger quarterbacks are. You know, Durant's having problems. He's not consistent. You know, we know that Lule's hurt, so we really don't know how he's going to play. And, of course, his substitute that we all love throwing interceptions, you know, is he playing that well? You know, Burris is playing great, you know, but then again, you know, is he playing great because he's able to throw out the options that he has? And, you know, and is it working out for him? And will defenses eventually do what happened to him in the last game and in a couple of other games? The guy can throw for a lot of mileage, and I think he's the exception for the rule this year, one of the only veteran quarterbacks who's having a really good year.
All right.
I guess, okay. All right, so that spiel worked really good for me. The final game. I'll start with
we were
the final.
Off.
You know, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, to talk about that, Lefevre is the real deal. Is he the real deal that can win a championship? Right now, he hasn't proven it. The game, he was unstoppable. And to me, that's a great trait. And if he can do that on a regular basis, it'll be great. But I think some of the defenses there that can stop the quarterback running, you know, C.J. Gable almost was a non-factor because of Lefevre. And that's an asset that they have.
Well, you know what, Frank, C.J. Gable's
been... You got to remember that, of course, a lot of that came on one play. So,
yeah,
right.
82 yards. But he was still, for a non-factor, 167 all-purpose yards, still pretty good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
I'm just saying the shadow was long that was cast by Lefevre.
Oh, very much so.
All right, let's go on
you
to
know
that.
What, dude?
Go ahead.
A lot of them didn't do their homework on Lefevre. Watch film on him, man, because he's not just a passer, but he's a scrambler, too. He done
oh,
it in college. That's what made him so successful, man. If you go back and look, Lefevre played at Central Michigan, man, a MAC school. He was racking up yards against Big Ten teams and SEC teams when he was passing, racking up yards. Even though they'll lose, he was racking up a lot of yards against big caliber schools. So he's not a slouch in any way. He has a pretty good track record being a starter in college. So give him a few more games, man, and get really acclimated into the starter's role. Man, that's Hamilton's bread and butter right there, man. Caleros is done. And I'm pretty
For
sure
now,
Hamilton knows that, too.
That's
well,
right.
we'll find out down the road. And to our final game of week five, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders reaped a whole bunch of revenge on the Toronto Argonauts. And they were the Toronto Argonauts because they could not do anything right, it seemed, in that game. And it looked, to me as an Argo fan, I feel so sorry for those guys. The guys that they're missing... Clearly, as a fan of the Argos, I can see personally how poorly the team is playing based on the simple fact that they don't have too many of their weapons, and Ray is not getting enough protection to make up for the new weapons he's trying to develop a relationship with. So, yeah, Saskatchewan was ready, willing, and able to take revenge on the Argos. They were full value for the victory. But they still have a few questions. Durant is not, you know, he's not any longer the great guy. And you know, he's losing his luster, basically, in Saskatchewan. The fans are starting to lose patience with him. But then again, you know, that's a fishbowl and a tough place to play. I mean, it's just the way Saskatchewan is. But they were full value for it, and they deserve the victory, and good for them. And I hope my team does make a turnaround. And I'm grateful that Ricky Ray didn't get hurt, you know, because there's been plenty of opportunities for him to be put on the shelf for 6 to 8 weeks. And he hasn't found his way there. Knock on wood, hopefully that trend will continue, that he will survive the defenses that he meets. And Montreal's is going to be a tough one coming up. How about you, Chris? How did you feel about the Argos-Saskatchewan game?
Well, the Argos were just a non-event. Similar to the BC, they just didn't show up to play football. Saskatchewan, Durant losing his luster, I don't think he's losing his luster. I think he's showing his true stripes. He's never been that standout quarterback. Last year he had a phenomenal quarterback coach in Kahari Jones, and Kahari Jones has now left him, and he's back with George Cortez and a couple others, and he's just not getting the advice, the coaching that he needs to succeed in the way in which he plays football. And that's what's missing in Saskatchewan with Durant. I mean, he's just basically playing Darian Durant football. Last year he was playing somebody else's.
He looks a lot sadder this year than he did last year. He almost I see a sadness in his demeanor.
Like he's not getting what he wants, right? He's not getting the plays that he wants. He's not getting the thing. I mean, the only reason why they actually did anything in that game at all was Will Ford showed up. Toronto had no film on this guy in that aspect of things, so to speak.
Oh.
And
awesome.
Inside the Saskatchewan lineup, and he was a complete unknown, and he walked all over them. And, you know, if you remember Troy Smith last year in the three games that he started, he was just lighting it up. Well, nobody knew anything about him, you know.
Will Ford, how can you stop somebody, a totally unknown entity?
What?
Will Ford had a history in Winnipeg.
Of course he did, but a player's film with Winnipeg is not the same as the player's film with Saskatchewan.
I got you.
Player plays different with a different lineup. And there's different things that you have to deal with, different blocking schemes and everything else. Saskatchewan may have been doing something different, allowed Will Ford to spring Will Ford a little bit better. And Toronto did not see that coming. And I think as if Will Ford stays the running back in Saskatchewan, we will get more film on him, and the teams around the league will learn to shut him down. And Darian playing the way that he wants or is, that Saskatchewan's just they're not going to do that well.
Tammy, you have a little knowledge about Will Ford. I mean, you know he's a good running back. He was always a good running back in Winnipeg, but you know, the young guy came in and stole his job. I mean, you know, that kind of happens. Tell us a little bit about Will Ford from a Winnipeg Blue Bomber fan's perspective.
Well, I personally think they made a big mistake, but, you know, they were cleaning house, weren't they? Trying to get rid of the old mentality, psychology, and, like, strip it.
And you think he was one of those victims of the old plan?
I think so. That's what I think. You know, it's been a bad week for, you know, in that regard for Winnipeg. G. Roy Simon Day, you know, ugh, we had him. And I watched Will Ford, and I was sitting there going, God. And who else were you guys talking about that left the Bombers? And it was just, I don't know. I think, I think he was given a fair chance in Saskatchewan. I don't think he was given enough time in Winnipeg, but I wish we would have kept him, but I think
Winnipeg's made some good decisions.
That's what they did. They wanted to strip it. Yeah,
they made some good decisions. You may not like them, but they made
brilliant.
Some decisions.
Yeah.
You know, they've made some good decisions. About the game, Toronto and Saskatchewan, did you get a chance to watch it?
I did, but I gave up on it in the third quarter because it was so
lopsided?
Yeah, so humiliating. I really want the East to excel this year. I think, you know, it's good for the CFL, right?
Well, it's your fault. Winnipeg left the East, and all, you know, we're all that's left. Just kidding.
Yeah, I have no nails this year because they're in the West.
Well, be grateful that, in fact, you know, there is an extra playoff spot available. You know, it's a question of whether two Eastern teams don't make the playoffs or two Western teams don't make the playoffs. You know, there are those options. So there is an extra spot that's available for Winnipeg or for Edmonton if the top three, you know, are as usually powerful. And I'm referring to Calgary, of course, BC and Saskatchewan. But I happen to think that this is going to be a tough year for the East. And it's nice to have you on our side, but it's really not looking really good for the East. And I don't know that it's a good thing for the CFL, but I'm not asking for any help, any undue help. It would be great if the teams could sort things out and the East could be a little more competitive, because it is embarrassing to watch these, as you said, these games that TSN want to broadcast, and they want people to watch all the commercials, not the first 75%.
Right. I think whoever gets crossed over into the East is going to have a fair shot at the Grey Cup.
It's quite possible. The way things look now, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. That's, you know, because, you know, we haven't really separated ourselves. And by that I mean, you know, we haven't separated who are the best teams in the West or the East.
Right.
And we haven't separated ourselves to figure out which teams in the East or the West could meet and where, you know, they stand as far as how they line up. You know, where us fan experts can decide who's going to win because of this has a better defense, this has a better offense. How do you feel, Mike? The Argos looked pathetic. They really did look terrible. You know, but it is what it is. They're very undermanned, and they showed that they were undermanned. We'll try Storm. Mike is away from the phone. Storm, how about you?
I watched probably about half the game sort of thing because of the garage sale I was telling you about before. But
I'm back.
Know, Toronto, you know, I picked Toronto to win, and they just Ricky Ray, I mean, like I told you before, I love him as a quarterback, but, you know, he needs an offensive line. They need a defense. They got to get their Schmidt together or something's going to happen there. And Saskatchewan, well, I think, you know, Toronto played way worse than what Saskatchewan played better as.
Yeah.
Score, you know.
No, they were Schmidtiful.
Yeah, Schmidtiful. Oh, I haven't used that word yet.
That's another word like pitiful, but it's Schmidtiful. Mike, you're back. Argos and...
Yeah, I have my mute.
I hear you.
I have my mute button pressed for a minute.
Were you at a garage sale?
they were very undermanned, but they just didn't. I think they gave up in the second going into the third quarter. But I do agree what Chris says. I mean, Darian Durant is not showing all the confidence either. I think he ran more than he passed, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of got out of the game, man, in the third quarter. Actually, I fell asleep on it. And,
he was not the reason they won. And, you know, normally when it comes to Durant,
he wasn't the reason.
We know that Christopher doesn't like him. We know that. But I have to say that he looked a lot more like the definition that Christopher has for him. But I think that's, you know, if you listen to the announcers, it's about him getting used to new people. G. Roy Simon's not there. Drexler's hurt. You know, he doesn't have the regular receivers he had before. And let's face it,
right.
It's a two-way relationship, right? We can sit here and talk about how great Ricky Ray is, but if he doesn't have any receivers, you know, he can't pass and catch. He's got to have people that can catch the ball or have the feet to get under the ball. And he's not getting that right.
I mean,
neither of them.
And you can tell Ricky Ray didn't have his people because they got more recent men on the field with, 3 days' notice? I'm not saying that Durant is a bad quarterback. No, I'm not going to say that. And, you know, he has to get used to his new people that he has on there. But, you know, it's going to take some time for him to get acclimated with his receivers and running backs. And I would agree with Chris again on the Will Ford. He had all the rushing touchdowns. But once they start watching film on that guy, watch how quick he's going to be shut down.
Okay, let's leave the last word to Charles Cliff. We're down to the last minute and a half. Sorry, Charles. I turned off your mic. Argos.
That's okay. I'll be
Saskatchewan. Okay.
Yeah. Well, hold on a second. Am I on mute? No, I'm talking.
No,
okay.
No, you're fine.
That's good. Well, I talked earlier about BC shooting itself in the foot against the Bombers. And early on, that's what Toronto did against Saskatchewan. Ricky Ray was picked off on the first drive. Then I believe the next drive with a fumble. Saskatchewan seems to be one of those teams, especially when they're playing at home, they get some momentum and they just seem to ride a wave. It just seems, I've seen it happen before, they get in that environment at Mosaic, they get the momentum and it just seems to build a snowball. When you go into Mosaic, you've got to get the jump on Saskatchewan and take that crowd out of the game.
If you don't, they feed off of it, and it always seems that they start rolling to a win, and that seemed to be what happened on Saturday night. Early turnovers by Toronto, they got points off of it, and they were off to the races.
Thank you, sir. We'll leave it there. Oh, it's okay. We'll leave it there, and you just heard the Cliff Notes. See what I did there? You heard the Cliff Notes. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been Candid Frank. The CFL is the best football in the world. We had a special guest today, David Juice Akins II. And, of course, we reviewed last week, Week 5's games. On Wednesday, we'll be back again, and we'll be previewing Week 6 as well. There were a couple of subjects I wanted to hit. We didn't get a chance to hit. We'll try those on Wednesday. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you again next time, Monday and Wednesday. This is where we talk CFL. You see what I did there, Christopher? Let's talk CFL. Yeah. Yeah, I did that, didn't I? Yeah, okay. But, you know, first and foremost, CFL is the best football in the world. And, of course, this has been another Candid Frank Live presentation. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.